Welcome to 216, a LinkedIn Past Randomizer podcast. I am your host, Fear Agent. A great show today. Armalex is on the show. Going to get to that soon. It's always easier to record these intros during football season when the Seahawks win. And they just took care of business against the Carolina Panthers, and it feels good. It's so silly that things like sports or rando or whatever can affect your mood like that. Something that you don't even have control over. I have no control whether the Seahawks won or lost, but it doesn't matter. They won, and I'm happy. So it makes things a little bit easier. Lots going on. League started. Week one is just about to wrap up here as I'm recording this. I think there's a few more races to go. Team went 1-1, lost the first game to Jamie Sher and Artie Walsh. I was scared of the towel room. They're a really good team. I'm a big fan of all three guys, Artie Walsh, Jamie Sher, and Plasma Kappa. I'm a really big fan of all three of them. Just like the way they handle themselves, and I like the way they play the game, and just really good dudes. Walsh was on Dante's show a couple of weeks ago, and that was really good. So you should check that out. But yeah, we split, and I'll take it. You know, would have liked to have won that first one. It was an ice rod hunt, and we ended up full clearing the seed and only lost by like 22 seconds, I think, 21 seconds, something like that. That always feels good when you play really well. You lose, and yet, you know, you feel comfortable with the decisions that you made. Not much you could do about it. Like, we made a couple of decisions. We played for GT in both of our races. Like, we had GT access pretty early-ish. It was like Flute in the second game and possibly Bombos. And in the first game, it was Ice Rod. In the first game, the Ice Rod was on Purple Chest, and the mirror was super late and just didn't work out for us that time. So we ended up overclearing. I also took a death on the way to Eastern to the Red Guard, who, after all this time, I just learned does one heart of damage, not half a heart of damage. So dumb. Why didn't I know that? Anyways, that cost me a good minute and a half or something, and we lost by 22 seconds. So something like that could have saved us. That was a little frustrating, but it is what it is. They're a really good team, and we were able to split. So we've got Kaz Boots coming up, not playing that week. Then we have the 80 Keys variant coming up after that. I'm not playing that, so I'll be back for week four. Spoiler pilot. I'm going to be piloting both Gamma and Shireen, and we're playing the Fendana Difters that week. That's a scary matchup because they're really, really good. So other than League, I haven't really been playing much rando, though. So in my gaming history, I've really only played Mario and Zelda games. I feel like that's been my wheelhouse. I haven't played much outside of that. I used to play Madden way back in the early 2000s, like 2003 to 2008. I feel like I played a ton of Madden. I played Counter-Strike for a bit, but my actual game knowledge is pretty limited to Mario and Zelda. I just kind of stuck to that stuff growing up and as I got older. But I began to branch out. So I played Final Fantasy IV, really enjoyed that, except for the last boss, which I still haven't gone back to beat. And I've always wanted to get into like some like turn-based stuff. Like, Final Fantasy kind of scratched that itch, but since it's action turn-based, I didn't quite enjoy it as much as I thought I would. I really enjoyed the Super Mario RPG style, where it's turn-based, like you have infinite time, you're not under the pressure of an action bar. And I saw the reviews for Baldur's Gate 3, and I'm not super into D&D. I've played D&D a handful of times, maybe less. And I just never found like a group that I could really click with. But I thought Baldur's Gate 3 looked interesting, so I downloaded it. Had to learn a ton just because I don't know anything. Like, I'm coming in completely blank for the most part. I have some vague ideas, but I think Baldur's Gate 3 does a pretty good job of teaching you and allowing you to explore and learn. So much so that it's taken up my entire week. I've played so much Baldur's Gate, and I just got through the first act. And I really enjoy the fact that you can take as much or as little time as you want. Like, I'm really invested in the story, and I'm having a lot of fun exploring. It's just been a cool experience as I branch out. After this, I'll probably play Final Fantasy VI. And then I think I want to give a shot to Chrono Trigger. And then maybe even branch out some more. I need to play Super Metroid still. I've never played Super Metroid. My friend who I played through the Mario series with and started to play the Zelda series with, I didn't finish that one because I've already played most of those anyways. He said he wanted to do a playthrough of the top like 100 SNES games. And I was like, let's calm down there. Maybe 25. So we're going to compile a list of like the top 25 SNES games and probably try to play through that. And I know some of the games that I mentioned here are going to be on that list. Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, Super Metroid. So that will let me branch out a little bit more and start to dip my toe into other games because my gaming history is very, very limited. Baldur's Gate's been so much fun, though. I'm like super invested in my character, and I don't want to spoil anything, but made decisions that I regretted. And, you know, you could always just reload your save, but that doesn't seem fun. Like, I want to live with that regret. Character died that I really didn't want to die. Got my ass kicked a lot. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I've been having a lot of fun. In fact, Friday night, I stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning playing, which for a lot of people isn't a big of a deal. And back when I was like in my 20s playing games and single, would do that constantly. I'd be up until whenever playing video games. But now I'm old and I've got kids. I haven't stayed up till 2:30 in the longest time. And I was tired the next day, but it was so worth it because I'm having so much fun with Baldur's Gate. So let's get to today's show. I've got Armalex on the show today. We mentioned this in the interview, but I recognized his name as someone who played Magic the Gathering professionally. I wasn't sure if it was a coincidence or if he was actually now playing Rando, and it turns out it's the same guy. So I kind of geek out a little bit and try to talk as much about Magic the Gathering as I can because I'm a fan. Like, I remember seeing him win the Pro Tour that he won, and it's hard not to geek out a little bit. He's such a good person to talk with because he just has a natural way of communicating. He's got his own podcast, and he's done it a lot. So I had a blast just chatting with him and learning about him and hearing about how he got into Rando. Really good stuff. And I try to keep the magic stuff to a minimum. I didn't want to geek out too much, but I do. But let's get to it. Here's Armalex. All right, Armalex, thanks so much for doing the show, man. I'm super excited to have you on for multiple reasons, but the fact that you've played as much as you've had the last couple of years, or I don't even know how long it's been. I just feel like you showed up and I saw you in a bunch of tournaments. I'm like, I kind of recognize that guy from somewhere. And you've been doing really, really well. So yeah, just thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, no, glad to be on. I listen to, you know, basically every week, I think, as of now. And yeah, I love the, you know, hearing from everyone. So I'm glad to hop on and chat too.
Yeah. And as a newer member of the community, I think it's really cool to hear people's stories about how they kind of found Link to the Past Randomizer later than a lot of us, and just kind of your journey in here. So yeah, as one of the newer members, I'm trying to press into finding people that I'm not as familiar with in the community. And you being one of the first, I feel like is a great jumping off point.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. So I don't know if you want to start all the way back or just, you know, timeline of Randomizer, or let's start wherever.
Let's talk a little bit about Magic the Gathering, because I saw you doing some races, and I see your Discord icon, and it's also, I think, your Twitch icon, which is very familiar if you've played Magic the Gathering, especially following some of the Star City Games stuff, which I was heavily into from like the first Innistrad set until the last Innistrad set that came out. Like, I was super into Magic. I was never good enough to be on the Pro Tour, but I played a lot and poured a lot of time in playing. And so I saw your Discord icon and I was like, wait a second, is this the same person playing Link to the Past Randomizer that I know of that is one of a Pro Tour? And turns out it's true. Like, you are the same person.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the backfill here, it's not like a secret or anything. I use the same screen name basically everywhere. But yeah, I played Pro Magic the Gathering for about a decade, from like 2009 to 2020 or so, when everything started to shut down for the pandemic. And then kind of picked up Randomizer during the pandemic a bit. I still play a lot of Magic, but the competitive structure of that game has undergone some shifts, and it's kind of at the point where I participate.
I mean, there's shifts all the time that has happened through, you know, Magic's history of the Pro Tour and all that kind of stuff, but especially lately, and then the pandemic and everything, and the way everything sort of shifted with Arena, and it's totally different.
Yeah, it's sort of coming back, and it's kind of interesting. If you I still play a lot of like the competitive constructed stuff, but Randomizer has kind of replaced my play of draft for almost non-competitive reasons. It's kind of interesting.
Okay.
I think the way I'd sort of liken it is, imagine if you have been playing the Cross Keys tournament since it started, and then you look back over the last 2 years and realize, oh, like a year ago, half of the rounds were retrants, and now we're just like playing retrants every single week instead of cross keys. And you're like, I guess it's fine. Like, it's still entrance, but like, it's not the same, you know, what you started playing and what you think is better. That's kind of how I felt about like that half of the game. Just like,
so is that the standard? Are you talking about standard?
No, draft. They've changed some structural stuff with how sets are put together. Which is like good and just like comes at a cost of, I think, some of the like fun and depth and interesting stuff there. And just like a lot more, I don't know, that game's equivalent of like big key hunts, I feel like, comes up a lot more.
Yeah, Limited was my favorite. I listened to a lot of Limited Resources with Marshall, and even before LSV, there was Brian, I think.
Yeah,
there was, and then before Brian there was, yeah, it was John. And then before John, there was what's his name, who is working on Ryan Spain, who's working on Magic Online. So I've been listening to Limited Resources for a pretty long time, just because I really enjoyed Limited. Magic, though, has just changed so much. Like, it's so hard to keep up with everything that they put out now, especially like when they started doing like Secret Lair stuff. I kind of got a little burnt out. Yeah. Here's the thing I feel about Magic. I feel like it used to have like ice cream toppings. Like, there was things that were like special, and now everything is special, so nothing is special, if that makes any sense. It was like, oh, you get full art basic lands in like the Zendikar sets, and that's like super cool. And now there's just nothing, none of it special. So it's all whatever. And it's just so hard to keep up with.
Yeah, I feel that way, like even down to like the low level mechanical level, where they kind of make this decision of like, oh, like, you know, back in the day, they would like make a card that's cool, and then 2 years later make a riff on it. And now they just are like, oh, people like this, so we're going to make 20 of this card in a year.
Yeah.
And then they've just like force fed everyone like, oh, they liked this, let's make a new thing they like. And there's a lot of design space. It feels like, kind of, I don't want to say burned up, like they're not running out, but like it's kind of like it's not like a special ice cream topping anymore to like have these things.
It's
not.
Yeah. There's just so much of it. And it's like Modern, for example. Like, I really enjoyed Modern for a while. I don't love the sets that were made specifically for Modern. It just feels like it kind of like broke things. And maybe I'm wrong, because I know that you play still a lot of Modern and some of the older formats. But it's just, I don't know, it just feels like it's hard to keep up with all of it.
I would sort of liken that to it's fast ROM, but it costs you money to fix. It's the kind of thing where like it's not what you played to start with, but it's like still it's like actually quite good. But yeah, I'm gonna keep trying to make analogies to Link to the Past.
I love it. Just bring it right back. So Kozatok here was the set that you won the Pro Tour for, right? Is that correct? You won Pro Tour 2014.
So yeah,
that was a great set, by the way. I love that set. Yeah, I thought that set was a lot of fun.
It was a good time. There's a huge gap in my video gaming history because of exactly how much Magic I was playing in some of those years. And 2014 is like dead center in the middle of when I just like did not touch a video game for a solid 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, as much grinding as people were doing, especially in that time, I feel like the Pro Tour was still pretty viable, and it felt like the community was in a pretty healthy spot, and the game was like real vibrant. It was cool having like the fetch lands kind of come back for the first time in however many years. And overall, that set was just a really fun set. Was that a limited? I guess you guys always played limited, right? And then you played standard as well.
I basically, the entire time I played was the like 50-50, where you had to play like half limited, half constructed.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a good time to be doing that.
yeah, for sure. Let's take it back. So talk a little bit about gaming. Obviously, you've been gaming a lot with Magic, but what about video games? Were you playing the NES, the Super Nintendo? What was your gaming history like?
So I am probably on the like younger side of the middle of rando ages. So my first consoles that I had were like Game Boy and N64. I had played like random family members' other consoles. Like, I think I have like a very distinct memory of like playing like 6 minutes of actually A Link to the Past on my cousin's Super Nintendo, where the only things I did were just like waste all of his rupees in the gambling games in Kakariko.
Great. Yeah.
Awesome. But yeah, so gaming probably got in, I can't remember, probably, so it would have been Game Boy, so it was either somewhere around, like, the Pokemon Red era or, like, Link's Awakening were, like, two of the first Game Boy games I remember owning and playing a ton of, like, to the point that my Pokemon Red Edition's clock, like, hit the, you know, 255 minute max or 255 hour max, whatever it is, like, I think I actually had like used all the rare candies in the game before discovering the missing no trick and like hard grinded everything to 100, just like that kind of
nice
grind. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But the, a lot of that, and then like N64, I think I got it around the time that, Smash Brothers 1 had come out.
Okay.
So a lot of like playing that, and then like the big thing was, that was a little bit before Majora's Mask came out, but that game came out and that was like, oh my gosh, that game is so good. I still think to this day that game is probably my favorite game, and probably, I don't want to say it's, I've spent the most time on, but like probably have beaten it the most times of any game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you play it before you played Ocarina of Time?
No, I had like, I actually never owned Ocarina of Time until like relatively way after, but I had borrowed a friend's cartridge of that and like played through it a few times and like, I thought that game was great, but then like, I don't know, in Ocarina of Time, you're just like, there's just like a dude running around and you like say hi and he's got three lines and like, you know, there's people randomly walking in circles and you're like, okay, they're here. And then like you go to play Majora's Mask and like, they just, because the game is constrained to like, okay, we just need these, every NPC to do 3 days of stuff. And they just repeat when you reset the cycle, they just get to like, everyone does something and like every single thing in the game has a purpose and is doing something. It's just really great. I don't know. I don't know many other games that have that level of depth in terms of what's going on. And they just like, because of the like bounds of the game, they were able to do that.
Yeah. I think it also is one of the best stories as far as Zelda goes. Zelda's stories have always been pretty basic. You know, you rescue the princess, you fight Ganon or something. They're not known for the best storytelling, but I feel like Majora's Mask being what it is was actually pretty good and pretty dark for a kid's game.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of stuff that just kind of, you're like, okay, that's cool. And you go back and you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy, you just like, oh yeah, he just pulled him out of the ocean and he drowned and he died. And now you're wearing his face around. That's cool. Right. That's cool.
Yep. Yeah. It's morbidly dark, but it's really, really good. I agree. It's a really fun game.
Yeah. So after that, I was basically, on the, like, you know, Nintendo console train. So ended up getting a GameCube when that released and playing, see, what are the games I had? I had like Luigi's Mansion when it was released. Actually, I think that game is another like, great one that's relatively underappreciated. Just a really nice compact game from start to finish. And you know, Melee, obviously that game is, you know, great.
Was it just like more, you're still pretty young, I take it, when this was out?
Yeah, I'm still in like middle school at this time. Okay. I had at the time I had a, like, you know, I'm an only child, but I had like one childhood friend and we'd play like against each other fairly competitively, but like to the extent of like, we kind of realized that like, oh yeah, sword users and like jumps were good, but we weren't like, we don't know what a wave dash is. Like, I'm still playing Roy over Marth, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and then, I think the Wii is probably about where I ended up taking a little break from gaming was, you know, the Wii I played.
Was it because of the Wii or because of the games or just other stuff?
It basically coincides, like, so I go to college, and unlike everyone else's story of like, yeah, I go to college and like I start studying, it's like I go to college and I'm playing like a decent amount of video games through my freshman year. Mm-hmm. Which is like playing, I think this is a classic, I have a lot of stories from college where the answer is don't do what I did, but I did this most fine. Yeah. Where like I readjusted my sleep schedule for finals my freshman year by staying up all night, just like start to finishing Super Mario Galaxy 1, just like playing Brawl with people in my dorm. But the last week of freshman year is when I discovered that there's like an actually good game store in my college town. And then the like summer over between my freshman and sophomore years, I'm like playing a bunch of Magic. And at the start of my sophomore year is when I like qualify for my first Magic Pro Tour, which goes exceptionally well. Like the, to give the A Link to the Past randomizer equivalent, it's like like losing in the play-in race for brackets effectively. And like, I'm just like off from there and kind of like playing some stuff, but playing a lot less at that point.
Sure. I mean, Magic is a grind, right? You were doing a lot of Star City game stuff, right? I don't even know if they are still doing anything anymore, but
yeah, I mean, it's, I was conveniently located in like Midwest, East Coast region. So just like getting to anything on any weekend was kind of just like, yeah, it's really easy. You just like go somewhere and it's like, I don't know, I drove 3 hours or like hopped on a 2 hour plane flight and we're just like at an event. And yeah,
That was the one thing about Magic that I didn't love is even though the game is made in the Northwest here, like I've been to the offices, there's not a ton of tournaments over in Washington just because it's so isolated. It feels like, especially with as big as Star City Games was back then, you know, it was just traveling up and down the East Coast, the Midwest for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. The whole Rocky Mountain thing and something about getting a van across that was always a problem, was my understanding.
Yeah,
that's I definitely appreciate that aspect of playing rando these days, is that it's just like I'm
get a not play anywhere
required to like get on a plane or whatever.
yeah, for sure. So you start your grind then in college, and how long does the grind go for? You said until like 2020?
Yeah. Like literally, it's one of those things where like, basically they had a system where like you basically just like at the end of every year, they checked to see how you did and you could like qualify again or not. And I just had like a lot of situations where it was just like, okay, I got to like win at this last event. Otherwise that's it. And I would just always get extremely lucky and end up in the spot where it's like, okay, I won like a little bit more than I needed to, and just string along and just like played everything. It was a really good time. And then right around start of 2020, two things had happened where like the game had made a shift to like try to be an esports model, which like throughout this time, like, so I graduate college, I get a job, I'm like doing other stuff and doing this. It's kind of hard to be like on the esports lifestyle when doing that. And they had changed that and like switched over to like slightly smaller stuff. And I was like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to like play a bunch more, scale back and figure this out. And then I had a plane ticket to a like large open tournament in my hometown, Detroit, which happened to be like, I don't know, March 11th, 2020. That did not happen. So 2020 rolls around and a couple things coincide. So at the start of that year, I had been watching, I think it was AGDQ 2020 had ended with a Super Metroid Impossible run.
Okay.
And I'd been watching all the GDQs. Like, I'd always just like pop on and see like, oh, this VOD looks interesting, I'll watch like this game or that game. And that one I just like happened to catch live at like 2 a.m. because I was just like, you know, awake for no reason.
Sure.
And I watched it and I was like, I love watching Metroid runs, but this was horrible. Let me see what other, let me go through the GDQ VODs and see what Metroid runs I've watched or haven't watched. And immediately the first one I find is, it's what the Andy Ivan co-op SMZ3.
Yeah.
And I watched that and that is just like mind blowing. I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Was Super Metroid a game that you had an interest in before the watching the GDQ, or was that a game that you had like gone back and played?
So this whole like big video game break, I actually had started getting back in about, was it 2016? I started traveling a lot for like my day job. Mm-hmm. So I just had a bunch of extra hours on planes over the course of a year. And that had prompted me to buy, I think I was also like commuting, like when I was like, you know, not only traveling, but like a long commute on normal days. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to buy a 3DS. And because I had started on the N64, I had missed like a ton of games. I just never played them. Yeah. So I'm just going to like, eShop and play all these classic games that I had never played.
Man, and the 3DS is great for that, by the way.
It had so good.
Everything. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
And unlike the traditional Nintendo thing, it was like $5 and you got all the Mario games. And you're like, okay, sure. Yep. And you have save states, so you can just like play Zelda 2 without having any of the real Zelda 2 problems. Yeah. So I think through that, I had played two games where I was like, I regret not playing this before. And one of them was Chrono Trigger and one of them was SM. SM is just like that game, I think, still holds up. And I think it's really awesome. It's also just like physically impossible to play, but like
it's hard.
It yeah. is. Yeah. I still have not touched SNZ 3 to this day.
Sure. Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger was the other one you said?
Yeah, yeah. That game is I don't even like the JRPG genre, but that game is something else.
Okay. Because I just started getting into the JRPG stuff. Like in the Discord, I asked people, like, where do I start with Final Fantasy? And I played Final Fantasy IV. For the most part, I really liked it, except for the boss fight, which I still haven't finished. But I keep hearing from especially Elizan that Chrono Trigger is pretty amazing. So
yeah, I think it has a lot of the same like Majora's Mask thing where like it feels like everything happens, like people are just like doing stuff and things are happening, even more so than like the traditional Final Fantasy. Like, what is the plot? Like the game is very well segmented so that you have like plot points that like start and end and make sense, as opposed to just like you're just like moving along in the same world in Final Fantasy and you're just like, I don't know what's going on. At least that was my experience playing like five or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, so SMZ3 still have not actually played a seed, but that was what caught me into the randomizer, which is okay. It's kind of funny. I had heard about Link to the Past randomizer a few years ago before that. Does the name Zebra Unicorn ring any bells to you?
Not to me, no.
Okay. So Zebra is, there's someone that is, I believe they describe themselves as someone who knows everything about Link to the Past speedrunning, but never plays or something like that.
Okay.
All but right. They're commonly in like the Andy chat circles and have been for a long time.
Okay.
But they were also involved in the Magic Sphere, and a couple people I knew that were adjacent to them got into Rando, Link to the Past Rando, and actually were playing it at 2017 or 2018, one of the GDQs that was in the DC area. And the first thing I heard about the game was someone complaining about losing to GT routing. And I was like, this game sounds stupid. Like, why are you putting, you know, all this randomness, you know, an hour and a half into a game, like, why would you play that? And just not thinking about it again until seeing SMZ3.
That's hilarious. So did you play Link to the Past at all besides that one time you're borrowing it or playing with a friend before? Was that one of the games that you downloaded on the 3DS?
So I had that one for, they made the GBA remake of it. And that was my experience with Link to the Past.
Yeah.
And I think I played it once. And this was after I had played, I had played Link's Awakening into OOT, into Majora's Mask, and the Seasons games. So I played this game and I'm like, okay, I get that this was made before these, but like, this game is not nearly as good. Why is every boss an eyeball? Why are half the dungeon items like a male? I didn't get it. And I think I only have completed the game like four times, and two of those were NMG attempts last year.
Okay. All right. So you didn't have a real affinity for the game going into Rando then?
No, not in the slightest. It's still well outside. I listed those other Zelda games, and I think all five of those are in my top five, at least ahead of it. So I did not really like A Link to the Past a ton. And when I started watching, so this was, you know, I found the SMZ3 run, and then there was, I think there was like the SMZ3 tournament at the start of that year. And I just like, you know, obviously you do the thing where you stumble upon a GDQ VOD and you look up, it's like, okay, so Andy and Ivan, let's look up their Twitches. And it's like, oh, Andy is just playing a million SMZ3 seeds, because I go back to look at this and probably, I want to say it was like April or something of that year when the SMZ3 tournament is in effect. So I'm just like watching a bunch of this, and then like interspersed are just like, oh yeah, here's like a, you know, open letter of ALTGPR. And I'm like, I watch it. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And I think there's also an interesting effect of this where like a lot of people get into, you know, like, oh, I watch Andy because he's just the biggest streamer. And I think that like I had this idea that like I didn't want to play the game because you watch him and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to hover EDM and like do all this stuff. And you're like, I don't want to be involved in this. This is not like something I want to learn. Like I've, you know, as someone who like took a long break from video gaming, I'm not going to be like, what frame perfect inputs? We're not doing any of that.
Right.
I keep watching. And the thing that actually got me to actually sort of get interested in standalone Link to the Past randomizer was I watched the 2020 CrossKeys tournament where Andy made a run to the finals.
Okay.
And I thought CrossKeys was the coolest thing ever. It was just like, I don't know what about it set it apart, but I just thought it was really cool. I mean, it is really cool.
It's the best mode, right? Like, there's a reason why it's become as popular as it's become in the last few years. It's the best mode. It's the best mode to play for sure. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree. So I watched that. I watch Andy's eventual loss in the finals to Lynn. And like for the next year, I am like playing a lot of competitive Magic online and like working from home. And I'll just like have an Andy stream on the background. And it's like just slowly like rolls around, you know, another year. And I'm watching the 2021 CrossKeys tournament. I'm like, oh, awesome. This is great. I get to like, you know, I'm watching like one of the people most likely to win the tournament throughout the whole tournament, watching all the VODs. And it gets to round 8 of this tournament. And Andy is paired up against Zelga. And he's like, oh, yeah, Zelga's really good at this game. You know, like really good execution, blah, 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 blah. Things that have been said on this podcast over and over and over.
Right. Right.
And so I watch Andy's side and he just like loses. And he's just like completely smoked in that game, I think. And I'm like, whoa, that's cool. Let me watch this other guy and see how good he is. And it's kind of funny, just like night and day of just like you watch Andy play and it's a lot of like really flashy stuff happening and like hovering and all this stuff. And then you just like watch Zelga play and he's just like, I'm just going here and doing the thing. I'm going to go do the other thing. Like right. He just does it very well.
Yeah.
I think that like literally that exact game was like, oh, I guess I could just play this. Like there's not really like I don't have to do all this other stuff. Like if you can be this competitive by just like, I don't know, playing good and going to the right places and being smart about it, like what? Why don't I just do this next year? And so I'm just like, okay, I'm just gonna play the 2022 CrossKeys tournament. And that was kind of my plan from that point, which involved a lot of like, I want to say I had played maybe like, I don't know, 10 seeds total to that point, and they were just like a hodgepodge of other stuff. So that's like July of 2022.
Okay.
And basically I want to say somewhere in Andy's chat, Dr. Earworm had brought up the GOMO podcast as like a resource for new players. And so I start listening and I start at the same time, like setting up and I want to say for a solid like 4 to 5 months playing randomizer for me was basically seeing that Zelga had a new CrossKeys VOD, downloading the seed and playing it. And then watching and seeing everything I did wrong.
That's awesome.
Is a very good way to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the best, too. I mean, you know, if you've listened to the show, how much I love Zelga and especially the way he plays the game and the way he handles himself. It's just he's so good. And, you know, it sucks that he hasn't been able to turn it into tournament wins or whatever. But I just love rooting for that guy. And I love the way he plays the game, like just loves playing rando and is really good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you just watch his stream and he's just like, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. It's time to do this. Here's the map tracker and like the item tracker on the screen. It's just all there. And you're just like, Oh gosh, I like can like watch all the things happen. And like slowly, you know, you play enough and you listen to this enough and you develop this sort of like, I don't know, CrossKeys is all like there's some amount of like assessment, but a lot of it is just generally like developing a sense of like, oh, it's time to go do these things.
Yeah.
And you develop that really fast if you just like listen to someone who is as methodical at the game talk about it over and over.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Zelga's the best to learn from, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I have definitely learned a lot from watching other people, but it's like different levels of a lot. And I don't know if I would have, let's say, learned as much from watching Telethar if I had not already developed a baseline for the mode and understanding.
Sure.
He's like, I don't know, he's kind of a maniac, but he's always like trying professor. Stuff.
It's like trying to go to college, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't take college courses when I'm in elementary school because it would be too hard. I just don't know what's going on. But as you progress and you get good and you kind of develop stuff, then you can start learning stuff from guys like Telethar who are just so meticulous and good at what they do, like assessing the situation and playing the odds and all that kind of stuff. And Zelga, I feel like I'm a little bit more towards the Zelga side of like, you'll read the logic, but you kind of go with the feel of how the seed's going. Everyone has a different way of playing the game. And I think that's what's cool about it. Much like Magic the Gathering, right? Like Magic the Gathering has so many different modes. You can do commander, you could do standard, or you could do draft, or you could do sealed, or you know, there's a modern or whatever, and everyone can do it play the mode that they want. And then you can also play the decks that you want and find like the colors or whatever. And, you know, Rando is very much the same way, where it's like, I really enjoy cross keys, I'm just going to play entrance modes, or, you know, I really enjoy boot start, so I'm going to play as much as I can and become gem and play just casual boots all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I've really come to like, it's kind of funny, the two ends of the spectrum of like cross keys and casual boots, because I think they both offer a lot of interesting, like cross keys is obviously its own entire behemoth, but like casual boots is so, it's the kind of thing where like you can like, there's so many layers to like thinking about that mode, just because like everything is so fast and you're just like at some point like, okay, I have to make a judgment call based on this, but like also think about like what could have been done and like, you know, do I need to save a minute here? Like, how can I do that? And like, it is really intense and interesting in ways that I don't think open, you know, I don't play a lot of open, and I just haven't liked it, because it doesn't feel to me like it lives up to the same, depth as those two other modes.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's 2022 rolls around, and I kind of have this idea of like, well, I can route cross keys okay, but I can't execute at all. Like I think at one point I had learned how to mimic clip, but didn't know any of the blind script. Like, you know, very classic new player things.
Yep.
It's just like, well, to play cross keys, you have to be able to do this. But like to fight blind, you just fight blind. So right. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play the 2022 mentor tournament, which that tournament's great for, you know, all the people who have not played a ton or, you know, are looking for a spot to like level up their game. The mentor tournament's really good for that.
Yeah.
And leading into that, I think I had played some of the go mode asyncs that they had posted. I think the first one I played, I distinctly remember, was some horrific like medallion in front of swamp to get you into mire for your hammer kind of like nonsense seed, and like just like looking at that and getting crushed. And I do recall seeing RD Walsh at the top of that leaderboard as someone like, oh wow, this person is very good, and then trying to watch RD Walsh VODs and being like, I don't understand what's going on without a tracker. Sure. And what is this background, and this is absolute nonsense.
Sure.
Which is it great as that was interesting. But I think my first recorded race was during there was like the Open Plus Invitational season of Ladder.
Okay.
So I join, and I remember the seed being absolutely heinous in a lot of fun ways. Like, you are, I want to say, not quite hard required, but pretty close to like green mail, like fighter sword Trinex. Like, okay, it's your first ladder seed, good luck, enjoy hammer try next here. The whole thing comes down to like, I remember like getting go mode on Smiths at the end. I'm like, oh, thank God. And you go up the mountain and it's pseudo boots and GT Big Key is on torch, and the boots are back on purple chest where you left them. to level it up, my opponent in this is Obscure. And
this is your first ladder race.
First ladder race. He actually, nice. I watched back the VOD. I distinctly remember him getting on and being like, okay, my opponent is, I don't recognize this name, let's look them up on ladder. They don't have a page. Is this their first race? Maybe that's it for them. So yeah, I kind of trialed by fire. A lot of my early ladder runs were very like, you know, like learning to mimic clip GT on the fly and things like that. Like a lot of good learning experiences. And I kick off the mentor tournament, and that goes not great to start. Just kind of like, I look back and it's just like very much like, okay, you just like got paired against people. Like, I got paired in the first round and like had an opponent swap out for like, they had capped it at 64, and like the zeroth person's the last person that they were like, okay, so you might be a little ahead of the competition, we're gonna clip you out. And then like someone drops and they're back in, and it's like me versus pool float in the first round. Just like, you know, a classic, like not even that bad, it's just like you get randoed situation a couple times, and I end up in like the master sword bracket of that. And like the tournament went okay, but could have gotten better. But then looking back, my losses are like, okay, well, Faker Jr. is doing great now, and that was relatively close. And I lost a pool float, and like, okay, that went okay. And Prosky starts up about the same time, and like I somehow start that tournament by taking a win off Will WC, which is just like, I was floored at the time. I went back and actually rewatched that race and was actually like fairly impressed with my routing.
Mm-hmm.
So I get one off him. I steal one off Magno just because Magno decided to run by Floating Island without seeing that there was a big key on it and went for the big key on Aga instead.
Okay.
Oops.
Yeah.
And then promptly get crushed by a four. I think my next four opponents were Jay Coper, 2C, Jay Meesher, and GFE. And it was just like,
wow.
Just the ringer of like, GFE one was like one of those just like real slogs of like, you play a cross key seed where there's no bomb shop in the light world and none of the light world enemies drop bombs. And you're just like, what is going on with my resources?
Yeah.
And then to add to it all, it's like, you know, GFE is feeling as bad because like I knew from the main tournament that he couldn't hover and we both get boots at like the 3 minute mark. I can't hover. And then at the 6 minute mark, you see Mirror on the other side of Spec Rock Cave.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And you get it at like the 150 mark by like following a three connector chain to an entrance.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So yeah, I go like 2-0-0-4 and then like close out that tournament with two wins and like 4-4 for your first cross keys tournament. I felt pretty good about that.
That's ridiculously good for your first cross keys tournament. Like, you know, when I first started playing, cross keys wasn't really a thing. And the first league season we had cross keys and there were so many people that didn't know how to play it. And it took a while for it to become as mainstream as it is. But for such a long time, I was like, I'm never going to do a cross key seed. That just seems too difficult for my little brain. Turns out I love it. But it was like that in the community for quite some time.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people still today that are just like, I'm not going to touch that mode because I just don't want to think about it. No, I respect that. It's just it's kind of funny for me coming as someone who's like, I got into this game to play cross keys and like.
Yeah.
Realistically, I probably had played like, I don't know, not like a ton, but like in preparation for that first cross seeds, I was probably, you know, it's like your first cross seeds tournament, but I probably already played like 40 to 50 seeds. And like, I mean, I don't think I even had a sub two until like a practice run midway through that tournament. But like, I don't know, you're putting up times in like the 220s. And it's like for a first cross seeds, that's like pretty respectable.
Oh, for sure. My first cross keys took me like almost 4 hours.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I'm not saying my first runs. My first cross keys runs were a mess, obviously. But
sure. But I mean, it took me a while to get it going. As far as the competition of it all, like you come from a pretty competitive background playing, you know, Magic professionally. Did you see Link to the Past different? Was this more of like a leisurely thing, even though we're playing competitively?
Yes and no. I think that. Magic, it's very different to play not just Magic, but like a lot of competitive games are adversarial where yes. If one player is winning, the other player is not participating. You know, you play Magic or Smash or Halo, like the goal is for your opponent to cease participating because you are winning.
Right.
So I actually really liked the structure of this game. Because it's not that where like you just play a seed and your opponent plays a seed and you just get to the end and like you did what you did. And like it felt a lot easier to learn about the game because you just did all the things from start to finish and your opponent did all the things and you could see everything along the way.
Right.
And like in other games, there's no like learning from branching paths because you never had a chance to do anything.
Right. Right. It's more like golf, right? Like you're going to shoot your shots and then your opponent will shoot their shots and let's just see who shot it better. And that's kind of what it is. Whereas like with Magic, there's the back and forth of the cards you draw and how they play it and the sequencing of it all. You know, I mean, there's like it's just so different, even though it is, you know, one on one.
Yeah. And it's often like it's a lot harder to kind of like back out a lot of stuff about like what ifs or like I was saying, like how to like learning in that game is a lot harder. Just because of that aspect and learning in this game is a lot of just like it feels a lot easier. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the repetition of it all. Like even though there's the items are randomized, there's still only 216 locations, right? In a regular seed. Cross keys adds a little bit more of that variance, but that repetition will get you familiar with how it all pieces together, right? Like there's only so many ways to play. Link to the Past.
I think that, but also like if you just like watch back two vases next to each other, it's really easy to pinpoint the spots where one player gained like 30 seconds over the other, because they, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, you talk about it, but there's a lot of like micro situations in A Link to the Past that I think are like super interesting about like
100%.
You like run a seed and you're just like, okay, well, because of the way things lined up, I'm just never like, I can either decide to go to Catfish once I have Mirror, or Zora is never getting checked. And like, you can see how like someone did something different that let them not get into that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, especially in cross keys, you have like the very classic situation of like, when do you go do Dig Game and Stumpy if you don't have a Mirror? Or like, do you do that? And like a lot of these things like that, that are just like really interesting and really easy to like see like, oh, like this person put this off too long because like the thing they did after this was like go through three connectors to like check a spiral cave they didn't do. And it's like, okay, well that took a million years and they should have just done these things and expected to like lose a minute here or whatever.
Sure.
I think a lot of that stuff is just like super interesting, but also just like it's not obvious until like you've learned enough about the game to look for it. But like once you have, it's not like you have to like shuffle back through like all the other things that happen in a game and think about like, you know, should they have been like, you know, thinking about like something else happening and then everything else after that doesn't matter. It's like, oh no, they could have like very easy to extract that out. And I, you know, really interesting. I really like that kind of analysis. And like I said, with the casual boots, even the spots where it's just like, do I do iced tea in this seed because I like maybe misordered something earlier and lost 30 seconds.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the competitive nature that you have in yourself obviously was seen through Magic the Gathering. Did you have that spark as a kid? Were you competitive as a kid playing, I don't know, were you playing Magic even as a kid or a different game? And did you find that Magic kind of quenched that competitive nature that you have in you?
I mean, it certainly did, but I literally could not tell you when it, like where it started, because like, I don't know. I really couldn't, like, that's obviously where it was like, oh, I'm just doing a lot of this, but later, I don't know before that, like, and I, like, you know.
But you weren't playing sports or anything in high school.
No, I was a, you know, absolute disaster at like playing little league soccer or like little league baseball. I'd just be like out in the outfield being like, oh, look, there's a butterfly. I'm just going to go look at this. Like, sure. What's the ball? Like, literally no idea when this, like, what about like, you know, maybe like playing Smash with a cousin or like all this other stuff, like where that actually came from or like, no idea. But it just kind of like happened. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm just like doing this. And like, maybe it was just like as a kid, I ended up being like competitive games. I always ended up being like a little bit ahead of like a lot of the people I was competing with. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was just like being good at something and then just like stumbling into situations where you maybe aren't as good as someone. And then the competition is like, well, maybe I should be as good as this other person or this kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then those situations always very luckily ending up in spots where it's just like, okay, yeah, like you get the, like everything lines up and you get to like see what the next level is like.
Right. Which you did with Magic, and you're still playing Magic. So it's probably the relationship's a little bit different, right? You're not grinding Pro Tours and stuff, but you still have, you know, your podcast and I know that you play a decent amount of the older formats at least. So do you try to balance that between like the balance between like Magic and Rando? How do you have any time? I think the question that I have between all of it, like, how do you even find time to play Rando?
I think it helps with like a constrained set of stuff that you're playing at a given time, in both. Though there's definitely times where it's like, okay, I'm playing, you know, I'm trying to do a lot more in like Magic or Rando, so I'm playing less of the other. The last couple months have probably been a point where I've been playing a little bit less Magic than I normally have, just because I've had the overlap of playing cross keys into, I got baited into being the like 176 person in Kaz Boots, because you look at it and you're like, there's 175 people. How can I not be the person to join after sign up to close?
Sure. Right.
You know that feeling. It's like, well, there's seven people. And there, you need one more. It's like, well, I'm here. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then Lee's coming around. So
it got bad. And you actually played League last season, right?
Yeah. So funny story. Round 8 of last year's Cross Keys, I play against some guy, Zafakil. I actually had recognized his name from like lurking Alizen VODs. Mm. And I knew he was someone who kind of like was asking a lot of good questions and like trying to get good at Cross Keys and all these other modes. And we play absolutely heinous seed. And I don't remember the exact details, but I do think it was like one of those like Fighter Sword Trinex Cross Key style seeds, which you're just like, oh my gosh, why? I end up coming out like a bit ahead on that. And then afterwards, he's like, hey, so I'm, you know, looking for a league teammate, and it's me and IB Karma. So in Mentor Tournament, I had specifically like, you know, they post the mentor profiles, but Jon Snow had been around talking a lot of NMG stuff. And I'm like, I'm specifically in the Mentor Tournament to like learn how to not be bad at like doing Link to the Past things. Not like I can think about routing. I don't know how to like kill a boss, basically. So I had paired up with, so they do like 6 weeks of Mentor, and I'd been with Snoo, Aaron Snerd, and Vexifer, the rando babies, toddlers, kids team in League.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they did a great job that year, and this year of like, at least the year I was in, they did mentoring, and like people kind of stuck with them and flipped around between all of them in weeks. And there's a lot of sessions of like, okay, today we're going to spend 15 minutes going over Meyer 2 and then like some like Ganon fight logistics and things like that. And like really good, like, obviously they came from the Mentor Tournament the year before. So they had a lot of really good like beginner tips of like, this is how you should like focus on this. And like, you know, it's GT mimics one. Don't worry about this, you know, stupid NMG strat. Just do this like very simple one that loses 2 seconds or something. I knew Karma had teamed with Jon Snow in League the year before. So that was a name I kind of recognized.
Okay.
And I actually I'm like, I don't really want to play League because I hated the idea of co-op. I've come around to it, but like getting into the game and playing with someone else on the mic is just impossible. Like trying to talk to someone and play rando when you just like don't even know what you're doing. Like I mentored a couple of races this year and it's just like, it is hard, like not just like on the mentor side. I was really cognizant of like, I need to like focus. Tell my mentees like two rooms ahead about a thing.
Yeah.
So that they can like it is hard. And like, you know, you are trying to think and do things that aren't natural. I was like, I don't want to play League. I don't want to be part of co-op or like all this stuff. And then like 2 days later, I'm like, okay, fine, Zaf. Let's join up. Let's team. Sure. So we ended up in Open League and we ended up in a conference with, it was us and then two, like, you know, the league seeds teams into each, like they have like a very clear, like, okay, so these are like the top four NA teams, these are the next four, and they kind of try to seed it so that there's like a very clear, like, not all the good teams are in the same division. So there's a very clear, like, two best teams in our division, which were Norse Maddie, CJ, and Garrison, Kabuki Hondo, Activist Division. And then Asai, which are, I think they're a bunch of SMZ3 runners. It's like BFG Taylor, Tony T. Young, and why am I blanking on the last member? But like we were clearly like third or fourth seed. And like, you know, we just start off playing and, you know, Karma is like the absolute veteran of League. And I'm playing with him week one and just like, yep, we're just playing co-op. It's fine. Like we win again. Like we play Kazboots and I'm actually playing against Asai and just like I like beat them in like I think my Kazboots PB at the time and like
suddenly it adds up. Yeah, that's fast. 113 was your time against Dixon. 120,
yeah, yeah, that's what it was.
That was fast. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I can hit the route sometimes.
Sure.
And like we end up just like getting to the end of the regular season and we like somehow only lose our group because the last game there's like an Ice Rod in Thieves Town big, but also like Zaf had a stream blow up in like one round and couldn't get a reschedule, so we just had to take a forfeit on one. Mm-hmm. And we barely end up losing that and end up in playoffs, and it's kind of like, oh wow, like that went really well. then playoffs, like first round goes good and we end up losing to Farm Friends, who were ended up losing in the finals of Open League last year.
Yeah.
And like that whole thing was like, it was also like a really close match of like, you know, a couple games where like Karma skipped a mirror check, like after Swamp, like, it's like, okay, do you really want to go to K45 here? And it's like, no. And that's where the item is, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, I think I lost by like 40 seconds to Tabby Cat to be eliminated. Yeah. And it's just like, oh wow, that went really well. And I don't know. We were just kind of like, oh wow, this is good. So yeah,
Does that feel like, oh, I lost, but we're not expecting to make it this far? Is that the kind of approach that you had after the season?
No, I think it was kind of disappointing. I think we kind of realized that we were just like doing better than expected fairly early on.
Yeah.
It also didn't help that like, I had the match scheduled with Tabby like after coming back from Christmas, and then just like got sick the day of, and like was like, oh gosh. But like, I don't think that really impacted the game, but I was just kind of like, you know, you see, so like you drop into Deanna and you're like, okay, this is still going. And then you like look at the time after like, you know, he's exploding. You're like, oh
yeah.
It's that moment of like real disappointment. And you're like,
yeah, for sure. So did that change your perception or your, how you feel about co-op?
Did that tournament change my perception? A little bit. I think just playing more has changed my perception a lot. Karma and I have started warming up on, you know, the Open AD for this year, and we've been really enjoying it, and I've been really enjoying it a lot more than last year. And I think it literally just comes down to like, you have played more, and just more rooms of the game are things that you actually don't need to pay as much attention to. Just like, you know, you still like tell your teammate, it's like, okay, I'm going to go do Darkmire. Don't talk to me for, you know, a minute or like that kind of stuff. But I think that's just like, as you have less and less of that, it just gets easier and easier and more fun to play.
Are you upset that you guys aren't in the Invitational this year? Cause I mean, you win against Tabby, you know, you finish 41 seconds sooner. And then maybe win game five, you guys are in the Invitational for season six.
No, we're still one off, but I think the match against Chaz would have been interesting. Oh, okay. But like, I think that, I don't know. I mean, at some point it's like you accept, it's like, yeah, we took an L, like it happens, but like, it would have been really nice. I don't think we had any expectations of going that deep into the tournament. So I think it's hard for us to be disappointed. Like if we had hit Invitational, but that would have been the, like, what the heck actually happened point by a lot.
Yeah.
But like, you know, making like, you look back and you're like, oh yeah, that was a pretty good result. We did better than we initially expected, but like, feel like we could have gone further. Like it's hard to complain about that.
What about expectations for season six now?
Let me tell you about the NA side of the bracket and talk about the different teams that are there. So in order to make Invitational, the following teams are teams that we are going to have to clear. There is Pass the Bacani, which is still like that team is great. That's PH, who was good and has only gotten better the last year. Tepidino, who I think at least on the NA side of things, not going to talk about like Top Life's team being in the freaking Open League last year. But I think Tepidino is probably the scariest player on the not NA because he's SA, but, you know, the like NASA time zone. Mm-hmm. And then James, who, to be fair, so I know James FNX has a background in Magic as well.
Yeah.
And I think I briefly mentioned something about playing Rando mid 2022. And he's like, oh, great. Another game that, you know, Arm can beat me at. And I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, you know, maybe we'll take that part. But like, OK, so there's that team. That team's scary. There's GFE Sabo P Train. OK, sure. Why not?
Right. Yeah. I can't believe they're in the Open, by the way. It still blows my mind. Yeah.
Well, there's also Trinex, Awase, and Scary Olive. OK. Yeah. And then there's just also I think the favorites of Bread, Orange, and Hitman. Just like, what the heck?
Yeah.
So like, I have equally no expectations, but maybe if like the brackets hit right and they all train wreck on the other side, it'll be fine. I think depending on how modes line up and everything, I think we have a good shot. I think our team ends up being pretty strong at co-op. You know, we're gonna see, we got like a decent amount of flex in it, but like Zaf and Karma have been playing a bunch of spoiler because I'm out for that week. Karma and I feel pretty good about Open. Zaff and I, like, we're both, you know, big entrance heads and love playing co-op retrants. And then, like, Animizer, I don't know, we'll just have two people play and we'll see what happens, because that's how that mode works.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is you just kind of go and see what happens. That's literally the motto for Animizer.
Yeah, but at least we feel okay looking at our we've looked at, like, the schedule for, like, this you know first 7 weeks, and we feel okay about, like, okay, we can make this work. But, like, yeah, playoffs, it's anyone's game. Like I said, there's four teams on the side of the league that are just like, okay, well, when we get paired against one of them, we're gonna have to hope and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the open playoffs are just as scary as the invitational playoffs, in my opinion. Like, once you make the playoffs of the open, it's hard. It's really tough, especially with all the co-op that's going to be happening this year. That kind of throws a wrinkle in everything in the playoffs, which I'm a huge fan of. But
I think I like it. I think it makes things a little simpler. I am very sad that, like, I really liked our lineup last year for, like, okay, so, you know, Zaff and I are both pretty good at cross keys, but he prefers cross keys to casual boots. So he takes that. I take Kaz boots. We throw Karma into the garbage modes and let him do his thing of just, like, I don't know, go into the right places and then, you know, see what happens in co-op retrans. I like that lineup, and I'm sad that we don't get to kind of, like, have that work, but the co-op is equally fine.
Yeah, should be a good time. So
yeah,
you kind of jumped in and just started doing tournaments. Are you still enjoying that? Like, I mean, you've only been playing for a little over a year now, but it feels like that's mostly what you're running. Are you playing much on the ladder?
Not a ton, but, like, a decent amount. I've been doing pretty well on ladder. I don't know if I'm still looking to get my, you know, cross keys rating up a little bit. I had a really nice streak, and then I had, like, a really bad streak for a while, but I've been really enjoying the tournaments a lot. I feel like every time I play one, I learn a lot. So I played post league is kind of the point where I feel like it's like, okay, I like, you know, my personal record in league was phenomenal. Like, yeah, I feel like I came off cross keys into that. Like, I've established, like, okay, like, I'm doing pretty good. And then I tricked myself into playing main tournament because of the async qualifiers. And by trick myself, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, okay, I wouldn't want to really commit to, like, a ton of this, but I'm going to play the asyncs and see how it goes. And then, like, you qualify in, like, second quartile and you're like, okay, I have to play. And then I played the group stage, and it was a really even group. It was like me, Ascend, Ed, and FaZe. And it just, you know, I think I had, like, one mishap happen, but, like, the group was all, like, fairly closely matched. It was like 4-2, 4-2, 2-4, 2-4, and felt like it kind of could have gone any way. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, I learned so much just playing those games about, like, how, like, I need to be thinking about 1v1s in those situations, because, like, I think something that is lost in cross keys is that casual boot sense I was talking about, where it's like, do I need to start shaving time? How do I play to win as opposed to, like, play to complete the game?
Right.
I think in cross keys, there's just enough random stuff that happens that in most seeds, until the point that everything has revealed itself, you can't really know how good or bad things are. Like, I played a seed, actually playing Zaff on ladder like a week or two ago, and we played a seed where I just, like, I don't know, was just doing stuff. And I'm like, I need to go back to Meyer, but, like, I'm just going to do everything on the way. And it ends up with, like, you know, you, like, find GT in, like, pod area and you're like, well, I was going to go to pyramid anyway, so I'm just going to climb, and, like, it's fine. And, like, the end of the seed is just like, you're now in a big key hunt. But because you just did everything on the way, instead of, like, rushing back, you're ahead 7 checks, and this is great. So, like, in cross keys, you just never really get a lot of that sense in most seeds.
Right.
And, like, I really lack that. And so I've been really focusing on that in, like, the Kaz Boots tournament. And I've had mixed results. We're talking literally after I came off a loss to Obscure again, where it just came down to you, like, last locate an item that, like, gets you to the hammer, and you have the option of, like, well, I can just, like, go do the on-path dungeons and open pyramid fairy, or I can, like, you know, on the way, like, do a green pendant Helmasaur and, like, do all this other stuff and hope that, like, it's the thing my opponent skipped. And one of us chose the optimistic route, and one of us chose the pessimistic route. And my choice of the pessimistic was not right, but it's kind of like
right.
The other two times that this happened were, like, I won games against Norse Maddie and Malzanthalus just taking the pessimistic route of, like, there's no chance I can win this seed unless my opponent also like left hook shot in Meyer cutscene or like,
right.
You know, I hate everything that happened this seed. I'm going to go check, you know, I'm up on DM. I have to do Hera Basement now or like never touch it again. Like that kind of stuff.
That's what makes the game so hard, man. Right. Like,
yeah,
sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. And it's hard to figure out the pattern for it because there is no real pattern. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there is some, but it's a lot of like, you know, this second order assessment stuff it's really hard, especially because like coming from Magic, there's some hidden info of like what's in your opponent's hand. And like, that's obviously part of the game. But like when you are losing, it is usually very clear on a material level, like how you are losing, what is happening. It's like, you know, or like if things are going bad for you, it's very visibly clear when they're also going bad for your opponent. Like those like scrappy, you know, crap fest games where just like, you know, neither player has anything going on and they're both scrambling. You know that you're both in that situation and it's very easy to adjust to that. And that kind of like piece of rando of like trying to figure out how bad you're supposed to feel about something, that's really hard.
Yeah, I feel like so many of us route in a way where you just expect your opponent to god route, right? Like I feel like that's the common theme of, at least it was for me, oh, my opponent must have done X, Y, or Z, when in actuality you have really no idea. And it's how do you play to that? Do you just assume that they're going to god route, or do you, I don't know, like, which I feel like for me, I've tried to, maybe not successfully, try to eliminate the idea of figuring out what my opponent's doing and just try to play the best that I can for what I'm doing when I'm doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely how I play cross keys, but other modes, I don't feel like I can afford to do that a lot of the time.
Sure.
So I try to really think about it. And like, this is actually going back to that loss to Tabby. There's like a very specific situation where I like, she went like it ends up in like a Meyer medallion hunt, you know, as every seed ends up doing sometimes. And she just goes right into Pendant Ice. And I go through like this, efficient list of checks that like includes like, okay, I'm going to check like Pyramid Fairy and Catfish and Zora that I left behind and like, Bumper Ledge and all this stuff. And like, talking it through, like, this is where I really started thinking about this is like, well, like, you know, it's really easy for your opponent to have just like ducked out of Skull Woods and checked Bumper Ledge earlier in a way that like you had, you know, done it in different order where like, oh, you got the Fire Rod and you just went to the back of Skull Woods and didn't check it. Or like the Zora could have been checked earlier. So like, even if you assume it's like iffy, it's like, I don't know, you're like adding up all these things. It's like, okay, so technically you did 7 checks faster than Tabby did 3, but like, a lot of those are kind of half checks. And then there's that whole nonsense with like dungeon item waiting. I don't even want to start thinking about, but like, that kind of like on the fly assessment of like, what are the odds my opponent did this? Am I like actually picking up checks that point towards a win versus just like doing more checks? I think that's just like super interesting.
Sure. So do you find yourself more on the analytical side of playing rando? Do you enjoy kind of breaking down the statistical side of doing checks, or do you feel like you're kind of more towards the feel, or is it somewhere in between?
I would say that I am it's kind of like 50-50, where I often like something that happens. So in like the John Snow and Company Discord, you will often find me just like posting just like a Dunka tracker screenshot from a casual boot seed and saying, this is what happened, what would you do? And just like taking other people's opinions really into account and like just building up this like base of knowledge of like game situations where like, oh, this is how like X, Y, and Z, like I did not consider this, or like, you know, what are my options? Or like, I did these 3 things, but like actually like I'm supposed to like believe one of these things now, or have done one of the things later, just like building up this like repertoire stuff. And then like when you're playing, a lot of it has to be like, you just make a decision based on, you know, vibe checking it. And like, maybe you've got like 2 rooms in a dungeon to really drill down and think about it, 'cause you're doing, you know, the back of ice and you've done this like 8,000 times, but like, it's kind of like building up this game situation knowledge and just like going to the tape and post and figuring it out. I really enjoy doing a lot of that, where I'm just like posting up the like 5 decision points I made and like really going deep diving into it.
Do you think that comes from your Magic days as far as like grinding the Pro Tour and stuff? Like, because I know there would be teams that would get together and just try to like solve a draft format or a constructed format and kind of like go back and forth on like, if this happens, then what, you know, like we go trying to figure it all out. Do you think there's some that comes from that?
I think it is almost indulging in the stuff that you don't get to do again. And that, like, this is the thing that Rando is the, like, makes it so much easier than in Magic, because all these hypotheticals, like, you just have like a very clear delineation of like seeing all this stuff. And like the thing that, like, so I started playing Rando in part because I was like, this is like a really interesting and new decision process of like doing something in real time versus turn based is just so different.
Yeah.
And then like at the end, you sort of like, as you get really good at it, you actually sort of, the game turns into almost, I don't want to say turn based, but like you just start like thinking of things in discrete time of like, this check is 30 seconds. Doing this is 15 seconds. This saves like X amount of time. And like,
right,
when you start doing these like scenarios, you can just like be like, oh, well, like you come up with these scenarios of like, how much time actually is this? And you just go to your VOD and you're like, okay, this is how much time it was. I should think about this like this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, like I said, it's just like, this is the stuff that like you wish you could do in adversarial games. It's just so hard to do. And it's just like, sure. Oh, I just get to do it all the time here.
Totally. As far as community goes, do you feel like you've kind of found your people, so to say? I think League might help with that, but did you feel kind of embraced coming into the Rando scene? I mean, you've seen a lot in the happen in the last year or so.
Yeah, I mean, I probably have less than other people, but like, yeah, I you know, I've enjoyed the people I've been chatting with and hanging out with, and like I definitely, a lot has happened. I have, so to briefly summarize it, a lot of I have a history in Magic of things happening to or around me that are ridiculous rule situations.
Sure.
In part because I think it's very different. So that game, it is, I sort of approach it very different in Rando too, where like in Magic, especially, so like the game has gone through a lot of eras of rules enforcement, and people in Rando were talking about this too, with like the like DQing someone for like making a stupid comment or like saying anything in like the SRL room or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. So the times that I started playing competitive Magic, if you like look through like a very long lens of the game, it actually like looks a lot like the progression of Randomizer, where like there is an early era where cheating is a huge concern.
Yep.
And then there's a Reformation era where if you actually look at like the way they did Magic tournament rules, it was like, in the early 2000s, when I really started playing competitively in like the scholarship tournaments they held, the rules were pretty cutthroat, just because they just gave no quarter to people cheating. And then like slowly over the next decade, this rules started like coming to a point where they wanted to not have that happen. But then there were a lot of spots where like they were still sort of prison ruling a lot of stuff for no reason, for lack of a better way to put it. And slowly the game has turned to the point where it's like, it is like people who are cheating, and I kind of feel this way about Rando right now, especially, it's like the people who are cheating are just going to get caught at some point.
Yeah.
And if they don't, like, that's just really impressive on their part. And like, I don't know what you're going to do about it in that sense. Like, if they're cheating that good, I don't know what they're doing with their life. Right. But like,
yeah,
it's better to create a situation where the non-cheating players are happy with playing their games, and are like, if something goes wrong, put into a situation where the thing they want to be doing is just getting someone involved to fix it. So the game, I think that's a good thing. I think that's like how I've tried to approach Rando, and I've really liked it. But I want, back to like the topic of like things happening in the Rando community, I kind of joined this with the intent of like, I'm just like going to try to stay out of a lot of the nonsense stuff here.
Sure.
And then every time something happens, I just like, you know, it's like I have an opinion and then I post something. I'm like, I should not like spend too much time on this.
Right.
And then I find myself like spending 47 minutes scrolling back through a Discord conversation, reading it all. I kind of love it, but it's like, addicting. It's also like, why it's am I doing addicting. This?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that if you're able to like keep it at arm's length and not be involved and just have opinions, I think is the healthiest way to approach it. I keep getting involved, and I think that's my problem. It's like, I got to get back to just keeping it at arm's length and having an opinion that I can throw out there. But do you like where Rando is at right now? As far as, I mean, it is still a relatively new game to you. So do you like where the community and kind of where everything has fallen with Tark and all the BS that kind of goes along with that?
Yeah, I think everything that has happened, I've been like really, you know, I've had my opinion, like voice stuff and like the specy discussions and like a lot of the stuff. And I've been really happy with the way things have gone and been handled. And like, I don't think anything has gone too horribly. I mean, aside from everything exploding, everything's going pretty good.
Right. Yeah.
But that's,
it explodes, but can people pick up the pieces? And I feel like we've done a decent job at picking up the pieces and trying to keep the thing running. And I don't know. I think it's in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
And I'm a little biased, but yeah.
Well, I think the important part is that the vast majority of people are in a spot where they are willing to complain about things going wrong or things they don't like in Tark, but also willing to understand that the other person is there to discuss with them and try and figure out how to fix it, and not just like, this is malicious. In the rather unfortunate, like the fact that we had to have a cheating investigation spun up so soon after Tark, I think there was a lot of like valid back and forth about like, what should this look like? But it didn't really feel like anyone was like actively upset with the fact that like, we had to do this now and this is what we did.
Right.
There was a lot of like, this is what we did. How should we do things in the future? And like, can we clear anything up in the next 24 hours on this?
And that, which I think is really a good way to approach it, right? Like, it's not like, hey, here's the rules and we're just follow what we say. It's like, we're trying to figure out how to, we're all just trying to figure it out. It's all brand new. So do we, you know what I mean? Like, do we take what we're doing and can we evolve it into the way that the community, you know, is involved? And yeah, again, super biased, but I think the approach that we've had so far has been pretty good.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And, you know, I think that, again, this comes down to everyone in the community being pretty good about these things.
Sure. Dude, I could keep talking to you forever because we barely talked on the magic stuff, which is I'm actually way more. I kept going back to the magic stuff because I find that stuff super interesting and being a part of it or as big of a part of magic as has been in my life in the past. You know, I'm always curious about the people that are able to take it to the spots that you did. And but you've got podcasts and I'm sure you've talked about it a million times. And this is about Rando. But
yeah, it's always the kind of thing where like every time you try to talk about like I think there's some of this with like, you know, talking to people who play Rando too, where it's like every time you try to talk about the whole thing as a whole, you end up like uncovering like five facets of like, oh, this is interesting. Right. This is an interesting thing.
Right.
But then if you like talk to the person about like the same thing a year later, you could uncover like eight other things. And it's just, it's really hard to talk about like these whole things as a whole sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
Unless you've only been playing for two and a half years, like I have, then right. That makes it a little easier.
Right. But I guess we'll just have to come back on and do like a full magic episode or breakdown. I mean, you've actually been involved in some of the discussions of the draft stuff, which I always thought is interesting because again, I'm into people that are into like drafting and, you know, you have a background in a different sort of draft formats, but obviously have an interest in limited and doing that kind of stuff. So we've been doing those drafts on the podcast that have been kind of fun. I know you've kind of thrown your two cents in there as well.
Yeah. Those are really fun. Unfortunately, I looked at the Metroid lineup and there's like 12 games. So there's no way to do a Metroid problem. Draft.
Yeah, that's a problem. People keep coming to the games like, oh, we should do this game. It's like, yeah, we can't really draft six games. It just doesn't really work. The Mario series and the Zelda series worked because they have so many games, but I definitely have some more ideas for future drafts for sure. That be cool to have you a part of.
You know, if there is one, I'll definitely chime in. I don't know. I realized after the Mario one happened that I played more of those games, and like I said, the Metroid one. Metroid Prime's another one of those games that I could just gush about for forever. But then I looked at the list and I'm like, okay, so with the fourth pick, you're selecting like Metroid Prime Hunters or something. You're like, oh gosh, okay, we're not going to talk about this.
Right, yeah, it's like I know that there's Metroid fans, but there's like, I don't know, four, five, maybe Metroid games that are worth even like drafting. You know what I mean? Like, and so then after that, you kind of get into like what we did with the Mario draft in like the fourth round, where it's like, I guess I'll take New Soup 2 or something. You know what I mean? It's just kind of some of those games just kind of go, just don't have the depth. So.
Yeah, and it's really sad because the Metroid, like, it's so tied to speedrunning because that's, like, at least my intro to speedrunning was kind of just playing those games because they have the in-game timer and a reward for going fast in addition to being a great game. And it's kind of sad that it's hard to, like, I don't know, unless you just go deep on like Super Metroid, it's hard to like go in on that unless you're like drafting Super Metroid enemies.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. All right. But I do have to ask you the tilt question, which I'm super interested in here because Magic, man, that game fucking tilted me like to no end, you know, drawing land. And you're just like, what the fuck, man? Like, give me something to play, whatever. But so tilt, how do you handle tilt, whether it's rando, Magic, whatever, in the middle of the seed or at the end of the seed? What's your approach?
Middle of the seed is definitely the hardest. And I already talked about some of the difficulties of like, I mean, that is like the problem I've been discussing with a casual boost thing is like assessing mid seed, how tilted you should be is like an important part of the game. And not just like dealing with the tilt, but like that whole assessment of like how like bad things are. It's kind of tough where like you, I don't know. I've always had this like tendency to be like, things are going bad. How do I simplify the game? And like, that doesn't really apply in a lot of spots in this game. And that's been something I've been learning. But like in overall tilt, there's two things. Like in rando specifically, one of the things that I really like is like, oh, I'm upset about a loss. But like, again, that whole going back thing, it's like, you know, you lose by, say, 5 seconds in a cross keys tournament race. Who could that have happened to? And you go back and you are like, oh, I could have done like 6 different things better. I can learn from that. And like, I could learn from a win or a loss and like do it better next time. And like, you know, who cares if I wasted, you know, 97 seconds this seed, I'll probably just waste 10 seconds less, you know, 3 seeds from out. That's awesome. And then in general, I think that there was kind of like a moment actually like fairly deep into my Magic career where I think that, so there's something that is a struggle in that game where I think that I had for like a very long time, basically a lot of tournaments in that game run Swiss. And there's this idea like where it's similar to like a lot of tournaments are like the cross keys tournament where there's 8 rounds of Swiss. And after your like second loss, you know, you're out.
Yeah.
And then a lot of tournaments are run with like 16 rounds of Swiss and like the same number of players. So like you reach these spots where like it was very common for me to be in a spot where I would take my like third loss and just kind of like write off the rest of the tournament and not put up like the middle finishes are still really important in that like era of the game. And I kind of had this like realization at some point after, I don't know, there was just like one of those things where it's like the last round of the tournament and like an absurd confluence of things occurs and you're just like upset. And it's just kind of like, oh, well, this all happened in the last round. And I'm just like sitting off to the side now or like on the way back to the airport. And like, it doesn't really matter if I'm tilted now. I'm allowed to be. Just like, don't let this happen in like the 10th round of a tournament. Just like deal with like, as stupid as it is to say, just deal with it later. Like, it's just really comfortable to be like, it's okay to tilt off if you just are like reasonable about it and just like deal with it at the right time. Just like don't tilt. Like it's you know, it really helps when you're just like in the middle of the seed and you just like, you know, have something like random happen that is just like derailing where you just like, I don't know, take a death in a dark room and you're like, oh, that sucked. And you just like, you just go back in and you're like, okay, what do I do about this now? And then after the run, you can be like, why did I do that? And then get in the practice hack and like figure out how not to do that again. But you know, that's to each their own how much time that you want to spend on that.
Sure. I think you said something important, and that's allowing yourself to tilt. Like, I feel like it's all about how you approach the tilt, right? Like, how does the tilt affect you? And do you take it out on your opponent, specifically in rando, right? Like, that's the thing. I think where the question even came from is, do you tilt out and then start blaming your opponent for how things went? You know what I mean? I feel like that always bothered me. And if you can tilt and process it in a way that's kind of healthy, then, you know, there's nothing really wrong with that.
Yeah. And I'm definitely coming from a position where I've never, you know, I've had like rare occasions where I'm like seriously tilting off, but definitely a lot of spots where you're like, oh, this sucks. I'm like done. I'm disappointed. I would like to leave. Like that level of tilt. And I think that, you know, maybe this doesn't work as well if you're just like steaming off and not sure. Whereas like, you know, I still like, you're still like, you know, upset and you're like, well, I'm going to lose 30 minutes of sleep. But, you know, who cares at the end of the day? Like, it's fine to like be that level of upset after something and just like live the rest of your life.
Right. Does it go into the next day, the week? Do you carry it for longer than it is healthy? I think is the real question.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like you've got a good handle on it.
I hope so. But I, you know, I'm always willing to be wrong for sure.
Sure. Well, dude, thank you so much for doing this, man. I feel like I could keep going, but I've taken enough of your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show and really just giving everyone a chance to learn who you are, and I've already become a valuable member of the Rando community. Short time.
Yeah, no, I'm having a blast, and I'm glad to keep having a blast playing this tournament that I'm in, and hopefully, you know, 2024 Crosskeys, I am getting ready already, I think.
Just want to thank Armalex for coming on the show. Had a great time. This is one of the most fun conversations that I've had. Got a lot to say, and it makes my job easier. I don't have to really press to get answers out of him. Just a free-flowing fountain, and I loved it. I really enjoyed talking with him and getting to know him, and yeah, I hope I didn't geek out too much on the magic stuff, but I just really enjoy talking to Armalex. So let me know what you think in the Discord. Next week on the show, we've got one of the best people in all of Rando, Will WC. Will's one of those people that has been around for a long time, and whenever you spend any amount of time with him, whether in Discord or on stream, you know how good of a guy he is. Like, you just want to be around those type of people. And I didn't know Will a ton, but I knew that I really wanted to talk to him. And we did, and it was great. So come back for that next week. After that, we've got James FNX, and then we'll finish it up with Allison to wrap up the season. Just had a great season. Season 4 has been spectacular, and I've had a lot of fun. I hope everyone's enjoying the show. If you are, join the Discord. 216pod.com has a link to the Discord. You can join it there and come chat about the podcast or your favorite sports team. A lot of football is going on. Major League Baseball playoffs are about to start. The M's are in the grind. Just got swept by Texas. That really sucks. We've got Houston and then Texas to finish out the season. Someone's going to win the West. I don't know who it's going to be, but if the Mariners keep playing like they are, they might not even make the playoffs. So, got to turn that around. So, you know, I'm sure there's going to be baseball talk over in the Discord. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're available everywhere. If you leave a review, that really helped me out, both on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Even if you just click on the ratings, that really helps out the show. Lots of league action going on, so I'm sure you'll find me somewhere on comms this week and the next, as I won't be playing for a couple of weeks here. Beat Gaming Live's coming up in just over a month and a half, I think. Would love to meet people there. And that covers everything. I think that's going to be it for this week. Come back for Will WC next week. It's a great one. Thanks for listening.